Harper Audio presents The Female of the Species by Lionel Shriver, read by Paul Burchard. To Jonathan Galassi, whom I owe not only for this novel, but for a life. The envy of any housewife up to her ears in dish towels and phone bills, the women of the Lone Look had their water carried, their children watched and wiped, their meals prepared and their plates cleaned, while they sat in judgment, sculpted and wove, led religious services, and oversaw the production of goods for trade. However, one could recognize in them, as in equivalent patriarchal oppressors, the cold boredom of domination. Gray Kaiser, Ladies of the Lone Look, 1955. Il Oraren thought they were it. Yet they did not have the celebratory abandon of a culture that saw itself as the pinnacle of creation. Rather, they were a sour, even embittered lot. If these were all the people in the world, then people were not so impressive. I have wondered if they took Charles in as readily as they did, because they were lonely. Gray Kaiser, Il Oraren, Men Without History, 1949. I remember, in a rare moment of simple, dispassionate clarity toward the end, with Ralph, she said to me, "You win and you lose. You lose and you lose. You lose." "Some choice," I said. She was a beautiful woman, and she was tired. Errol McEachern, American Warrior, The Life of Gray Kaiser, 2032. Chapter 1. "Errol, I'm tired of being a character." Gray leaned back in her chair. "When I meet people, they expect, you know, Gray Kaiser." "You are Gray Kaiser. I'm telling you, it's exhausting." "Only today, Gray. Today is exhausting." They both sat, breathing hard. "You think I'm afraid of getting old?" asked Gray. "Most people are." "Well, you're wrong. I've planned on being a magnificent old lady since I was 12. Katharine Hepburn, frank, arrogant, abusive. But I've been rehearsing that old lady for about 50 years, and now she bores me to death." "When I first saw you in front of that seminar 25 years ago, I didn't think, 'What a magnificent old lady.'"
"What did you think?"
Errol McEachern stroked his short beard and studied her, perched in her armchair. So tall and lean and angular, her neck long and arched, her gray-blonde hair soft and fine as filaments, her narrow, pointed feet held in pretty suede heels. Was it possible she'd hardly changed in 25 years, or could Errol no longer see her?
"That first afternoon," said Errol, "I didn't hear a word of your lecture. I just thought you were beautiful, over and over again."
Gray blushed. She didn't usually do that.
"Am I special, or do you do this for everyone's birthday?"
"No, you're special. You've always known that."
"Yes, Errol," she said, looking away. "I guess I always have."
They paused, gently.
"What did you think of me, Gray, when we first met?"
"Not much," she admitted. "I thought you were an intelligent, serious, handsome young man. I don't actually remember the first time I met you."
"Oh, boy.
You want me to lie?"
"Yes," said Errol. "Why not?"
Errol found himself looking around the den nostalgically. Yet he'd be here again, surely. He was at Gray's house every day. His office was upstairs with a desk full of important papers. And though he kept his own small apartment, he slept here most nights. Still, he seemed to be taking in the details of the room as if to mark them in his memory. The ebony masks and walking sticks and cowtail fly switches on the walls, the totem pole in the corner, the little soapstone lion on the desk, and, of course, the wildebeest skeleton hung across the back of the room, leering with mortality. In fact, it was a cross between a den and a veldt. The furniture was animate. The sofa's arms had sharp claws, its legs poised on wide paws. The heads of goats scrolled off the backs of chairs. In the paintings, leopards feasted.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?